Good morning and welcome to the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station. We are the one, 95.1 FM, and of course, for 50 years and 6 days, we are KYMN 1080 Radio from Northfield, Minnesota. I want to thank the Northfield City Council, Brad Ness and David DeLong, and of course, Rhonda Palnell and the rest of them for recognizing Jeff and Terry for being the owner-operator of KYMN Radio, which has served this community for over 50 years, and I had the pleasure of being the very first voice on the air at 10 a.m. on September 27, 1968. Well, let's get down to business this morning. I have a guest in studio that I have to say, number one, thank you for joining us today, Randy Brewer.
Well, thank you very much, Wayne.
And I want to thank you on, I forgot to give him a call, but I want to thank you for helping Three Links Care Center during their golf tournament. You've been doing that for years, and it's a wonderful fundraiser for Three Links Care Center, so it was good to see you there again this year.
Yeah, they do a great job, and they serve a very good purpose for the community.
Okay. Have you ever taken a tour of the place?
I have not, but I had a cousin that got into a serious car accident in Cannon Falls, and then she went there for recovery.
Oh, okay. Is she okay now?
Yep.
Oh, good. Glad to hear it. Well, one of the things that I mentioned to Randy when we were out in the green room is that this show is probably unlike most times you get behind a microphone and talk basketball. This is just about you. And where were you born, who's mom and dad, and do you have siblings and things like that. And then I also mentioned to Randy that I'm not a real big knowledgeable guy about basketball, but I do have one question that I have to ask that a friend of mine, when he knew that you were going to be a guest on my show, he said you got to ask him about a game when you were playing for Lake City High School. What was the nickname of your high school? The Lakers?
Well, you'd think so, but it was called the Tigers.
The Tigers, yeah. Okay. Well, the Tigers took on a team called the Vikings.
Yep.
Does that bring back any memories?
Yeah, yep. Vikings do, yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What he told me, I need to have explained because it's amazing. You took on the Kenyan Vikings. And the Kenyan Vikings, from what this guy said, played defense by playing elongated offense, and the score that he mentioned to me is unbelievable.
You mean like 2-0 at the end of the first quarter and 4-0 at halftime and 6-0 at the end of the third quarter?
And 6-4, I think, was the final score?
No, the final score the first time, I think, was 13-17, and the second time we played them, it was 23-5, I think.
Okay. How do they do that? Those rules aren't in place anymore that you can hold on to the ball. Is there a shot clock in high school now?
I believe there is a shot clock in high school. Again, it's been a while since I've watched a high school game. There wasn't one when I was helping coaching, 15 years ago. But what you did is it was a jump ball every quarter, and we won the jump ball, went down and scored. And then that was the last shot we took that quarter, and then they held the ball and just passed it around the outside. And as long as you're ahead, you don't have to force action. So my coach says, well, we'll just sit back here and we'll sit in our little zone and see if they can hit a jump shot after passing the ball around for 7 minutes, 35 seconds. And they couldn't. And so we never had to play man-to-man.
Well, was it frustrating, though, that you couldn't play the game in a situation like that?
It's an interesting way to play the game, and, the first time they kind of caught us off guard with it, but the second time we were ready, as you saw, the score was 23-5.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would think that if you got beat by 23-5, you would consider that quite a butt-kicking.
I guess so.
Yeah.
What schools were in the conference that you played in high school?
Cannon Falls, Wabasha. It was Hiawatha Valley League at that time. Plainview.
And what was the farthest that your team went in regards to conference and state and district and regional and all that?
You mean as far as Victories and goals. We won state 78 and 79.
Oh, your junior and senior year.
Yes.
Okay. That had to be exciting.
Yes, it was. It was a great time.
Was that when all schools were the same, or were they 1A, 2A, 5A, 6?
There were two divisions, okay. 1A and 2A.
Okay.
And we were the small school.
All right. And then you played basketball for the Gophers?
Yep, University okay. of Minnesota.
And was Musselman, not Musselman.
No, Jim Dutcher.
Jim Dutcher, mm-hmm. yeah. And how did that fare? I don't know. How did your team do in 80, 81, 82, 83?
1982, we won the Big Ten title. So that's the last time that it's actually counted at the University of Minnesota.
Yeah.
So there was a time when Clem Haskin won it, and then that record was gone because of some type of... let's just say that when I played, we had to do our own homework.
Okay, I get it. Yeah, I remember that. That was quite a fiasco for him. And then we're just, entertaining people right now that are like me that aren't familiar with your career.
Well, I'm really old.
Well, yeah. Well, let me guess how old you are. Mm-hmm. All right, are you ready?
Sure.
Okay. You're going to be 60.
I'm 58.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's close.
Yeah.
Okay, you don't look it.
Well, thank you.
You look in good shape.
Yeah.
Okay, so then from there, the Gophers, you went into professional basketball?
Yeah. I was drafted 18th overall in the NBA draft in 1983.
That's a big deal, isn't it, 18th?
Yeah, but it's different when it was in 1983. The salary for the entire Milwaukee Bucks at that time was $3.5 million for the whole team.
Oh, for the whole team?
For the whole team. You could buy the Milwaukee Bucks at that time because they were sold a couple years later for $20 million. And about the time I was drafted, I think the Clippers were sold for $11 million. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Totally different. Was there, when you say the Milwaukee Bucks, it seems to me that in the back of my head, there was some real great player that played for the Bucks. And,
yeah.
And I think he had a name change or something.
Yeah, I think they call him Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
Or Lou Alcindor, if you're really, really old.
Right. Okay, so now, see, I got a little bit in me. And then how many different pro teams did you play with?
I played 7 years with Milwaukee, 3 years with the Timberwolves, a year in Atlanta, and a year in Sacramento.
And which one did you enjoy the most?
Milwaukee, I thought, was one of the best-run organizations that I've ever worked with. Very small office crew. We all knew everybody there. We knew everybody's job. And show you how old I am, B. Westfall was our ticket manager, and she ran a group of four or five other people that she had. But she had all the cards on recipe cards, every season ticket holder, and she knew them all by name.
Wow.
So
that's something. How much did the compensation improve in the years that you were in the NBA?
Well, a guy named Magic Johnson signed, I think, the first $1 million contract, and he signed 25 years for $25 million. So, that was, at that time, we were only going $1 million, When I was playing with the Bucks, when I first was signed with them, there was a guy named Bob Lanier who was a decent player and decent career. He was making about $600,000. A guy named Marcus Johnson who was making $800,000. A guy named Cindy Moncrief was making $400,000. And the rest of us made what was left, basically $120,000 to $150,000.
Which at the time was a nice income.
It was. It was a very nice income. And it was funny because one of the guys, John McLaughlin, he was a player in Milwaukee in the 60s and 70s, and he used to give us a hard time about how much money we were making. And I've been to his house. His wife ran a Bible study group that my wife went to and stuff like that. And I asked him a question. I said, how much did you pay for your house? Well, he said, about $10,000. I said, I just bought a house, and I paid $180,000. I said, so even though your highest paycheck was only $100,000, your $100,000 bought a heck of a lot more than my $150,000 did.
Yeah, and where was that house?
It was in Milwaukee.
I mean, your house.
My house was in Milwaukee, Brookfield.
Okay. What year did you get married?
1985.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So you were in the profession when you ended up getting married.
Right.
Okay. Was it a high school local lady or?
It was a girl from Golden Valley High School, which of course is gone now, but from the Twin Cities area that we met in college.
Oh, okay. So a nice, sweet story.
Yep.
Okay. Do you have children?
I have three. I have a son, Kevin, another son, Christopher.
How old is Kevin?
Kevin's 30, Christopher's 27, Kelly is 20 years old. So Kevin spent 7 years in the Army.
Okay, Kevin is how old again?
30 years old.
30, okay.
So he spent 7 years in the Army and was a captain, military intelligence, and now he works for U.S. Bank. Christopher graduated 2 years ago from the University of Minnesota Pharmacy School, so he's a doctor of pharmacy.
Wow.
And Kelly's at St. Kate's, and she's studying occupational therapy.
Okay. My wife's a graduate of St. Catharines.
Yeah.
And Chris is, how old are you? I like to write these
27.
Things. 27, all right. Any grandchildren?
Yes, Kevin has four now.
Oh, my goodness.
So, yes.
What are their names?
Addison's the oldest. She is 7 years old.
Okay.
Kate comes in at five.
Now, is Kate named because of St. Catharines?
No.
Okay.
And then there's Audrey.
Okay. Audrey. Yep. You know, you remember Audrey Meadows?
I do not.
In the Jackie Gleason shows?
Okay. Yes, I do now.
Okay.
Yes.
Audrey is how many?
She's three.
Three. Okay. And then?
And then Micah.
Micah.
He's 3 months.
Micah mm-hmm. is 3 months. Okay. 3 months. Well, mm-hmm. congratulations.
Well, thank you.
Well, that has to be a lot of fun. Do you get to babysit a lot?
Get to babysit enough.
Enough. Okay.
Yeah. You know, the best part about being a grandparent is I found that we're much better grandparents than what we ever were parents. And we got more patience. But my son has accused me of that, too. I said, well, it's because you're not pushing our buttons for the last 24 hours for 7 days a week. I mean, it's easier to be a grandparent.
Yeah. You know, Randy, that comment, I've interviewed a couple thousand people in my lifetime, but this style may be over 1,000 for sure. Mm-hmm. And every grandparent says, I wish I could have had the time and spent the time with my kids as I do my grandkids, because it's a luxury, because you're older, maybe retired, and you got more time.
Yeah, they're just more fun.
Yeah, and you, when your kids were growing up, you were on the road.
A little bit. We had them towards the end of my career, so it wasn't too bad.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So let's. Where are you living now, by the way?
I live in Eden Prairie. It's a place I've lived now for 28 years.
Next to a Viking?
Some ex-Vikings.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Who would that be?
Oh, they keep moving around every year. So okay. They're there, they rent a house, or they own a house for 1-2 years, and then they're gone. So,
okay. I was just wondering, because Eden Prairie is where a lot of them lived because of the location of Winter Park. Mm-hmm. And now they're in Eagan, and I would not be surprised if some of those individuals buy a home in the Northfield area. Because it's only like 35 minutes away.
Other than the fact that the traffic is just a nightmare, I was watching it as I was driving in, from, basically Burnsville on. That's probably an hour drive from Burnsville to where they're practicing.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, they would be commuting with the traffic.
Yeah, they're going the wrong way a lot of times.
But for you today, it was pretty easy, right?
Oh, yeah, it's a simple drive down here. Too.
Did that surprise you when you followed 19 and took the corner and there we were?
No, it didn't surprise because you told me about it.
Oh, okay.
And I remember that stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Speaking about remembering that stuff, I have to remember that we have a client that has been with KYMN Radio for 50 years, and they're like 50, 51 years old, and it's called the Quarterback Club. And the Quarterback Club is on Highway 3 and 3rd Street in Northfield, and they're known for their great breakfasts that they serve from 6 to 10 every morning, Monday through Saturday. They're well known for their roasted chicken. It's just delicious. They're well known for their coleslaw. It's like dessert. You eat it at the end of the meal. And, of course, they introduced baby back barbecued ribs with mountains of madness just oozing all over them in the form of a special sauce. And it's locally owned and locally managed. And that's called the Quarterback Club, which originally started by the Minnesota Vikings, members of the Vikings, started that franchise back 50 years ago. You would not have been involved in a quarterback club because there's
no
Northfield.
No, because it's
North.
Called basketball. Yeah, there's no quarterbacks in our.
All right. Now, Randy, where were you born?
Born in Lake City, Minnesota.
Okay. And in town or on the farm?
I'm not that old. I was born in a hospital.
Okay.
Yeah, grew up on a farm.
Okay, and what type of a farm?
We were dairy farmers, but of course everybody knows if you're a dairy farmer, 50% of your calves are born are male, so then we also became beef farmers also just by the fact that you had dairy herd. And so we ran a small Hereford herd. My dad and my uncle farmed the land together. My dad had 240 acres. My uncle had 240 acres. And at that time, you can make a decent living with 240 acres.
Were they adjacent to each other?
Yes, they
were. Okay. I have a question in that regard. Did that come through your grandparents?
Yes. My grandfather, it's actually kind of funny. My great-great-grandfather, when they came over from Germany, and they snuck aboard a boat, and then when the boat got so far out to sea, then they came up and introduced themselves to the captain two at a time, and then they worked their passage and paid their passage over. And then when they got basically to Lake City, they saw this big river called the Mississippi, and they went, well, that kind of looks like the Rhineland River, so I suppose this area is pretty much just like what we left in Germany. And so they bought some farmland, and the farmland my great-great-grandfather bought was on top of the hill close to a wooded lot. And because at that time, that area, the Indians had used that area as a place where they would prairie fires, and they would not have trees because every year they'd start the prairie on fire and it'd burn through, and they'd shoot the animals as they came out, and that was their food for the winter.
Wow.
And so that's how they hunted and gathered. But the area that my grandfather bought had some trees on it because if you're going to build a barn, you need trees. And they cut all their trees themselves and so forth like that and built their barns. And so my grandfather, living next to trees, realized real quick that there's no way in hell that he was going to fence around trees anymore. So he went and bought a farmstead basically 2 miles from where my grandfather lived.
Well, the reason I'm interested in that is that I've been to Lake City, and a beautiful community. My wife is the chairwoman of the Ambassador Program for Defeat of Jesse James Days, and we go to Lake City. It's a water ski days.
Yep, water ski days.
And it's always a wonderful, picturesque deal. One time I have a convertible where the top doesn't go up, and we were down there. And at about halfway through the parade, it started raining, and they got in their cars and vans. I'm all alone. And then they had a makeshift stop-and-go light on Highway 61 in the middle of nowhere.
Yep.
While they were doing, remember that?
Yep.
While doing construction. And there I am sitting at the stop sign, pouring rain, and people looking at me like, what an idiot. But I remember that particular day. But my question is, farming in Lake City just never registered with me because to me it's a Highway 61 and cliffs and bluffs and things like that.
And did you notice that there's no water towers in Lake City too when you drove by?
I never thought of that.
Because everything's up the hill. So if you're driving Lake City going south, everything's on top of the hill. So all their water comes from wells, and they don't have to put a water tower up because they have cisterns up on top of the hill, and it's all gravity flow down just like a water tower would be. So if you go up about 6 miles on, take a right on any one of the roads leading out of Lake City, you'll end up at our farm at some point in time.
Okay. I have taken 60, but that goes into Wabasha, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And that's where our sewer water goes. So that's when we flush the toilets, that's what they're drinking down there. There's a rivalry between Lake City and Wabasha, always has been.
I was going to ask you that Wabasha had its own school, and you had your own school.
Yep.
I assume you played each other.
Yes, we did.
And so you were the big, like Northfield and Faribault.
Yeah, well, we can't really talk about their team name back when we played them because it was the Wabasha Indians, and that would be just wrong now.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. What did they have to do to rename that?
They changed their name, and I cannot for the life of me remember what they changed it to.
All right, so do you have siblings, brothers, sisters?
When my parents had me, they decided they couldn't improve on perfection, so they decided to adopt. So I have a brother and sister through adoption.
Oh, yeah. I have a daughter that's adopted. Mm-hmm. And what are their names?
Rick Brewer.
Rick Brewer. Yep. And is he younger than you then, obviously?
Yes, he is.
Okay. How much younger?
He's 45.
Okay. And then after Rick?
Beth.
Now, what was that like, if I may ask? How old would Beth be about now? Was she a little sister?
Well, she would be older now if she was still alive. She passed away 2 years ago.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, she just didn't wake up one night morning.
But she was probably in her 30s or 40s.
Yeah, she was early 40s.
Yeah, okay. Sorry to bring that up. But when I, like I said, I have an adopted daughter, and when she was 14 or probably even younger, she had really curious about her biological parents, and even went to a lawyer mm-hmm. when she was under 18 to see if she, and now she doesn't care. I'm not the least bit interested. And today you could find out in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So what about Rick? Has he ever tried to reach his biological parents?
From my knowledge, no, he has not. My sister did, and I've met her mom and stuff like that.
Okay.
And they had some type of relationship, you know, but it was much later in life.
Yeah. And I think most of the time there's sometimes maybe money involved, like, hey, what if my biological parents are real rich? And then, of course, probably most of the time they're not.
Yeah, that wasn't the case here. It was just, you know, pregnancy at the wrong time, wrong place. And yeah.
So Rick was how many years younger than you? Quite a bit, huh?
Yeah. I'm probably wrong on the age. He's probably now 48, 49. He's probably 48, 49 now.
So you were the big brother.
Yep.
And that's literally.
Yes.
Okay. And so you had to get up in the morning, and what were your chores when you were a kid?
We didn't really have many chores because the bus showed up at 8 o'clock in the morning. So in the morning there wasn't too much chores, but at night it was feed the cows, clean the buckets and so forth like that, feed all the little calves, bottle feed them, and then, you know, help with whatever farming exercise that there was at any particular time. I grew up, and my favorite tractor to drive was a John Deere G that my grandfather bought in 1947, along with my dad and my uncle. And at that time, that was one of the bigger tractors out there. And I still have it, and I still go out and run it every once in a while on the farm, and it runs great. I was there out yesterday, and I fired it up, and it started up on the second turn, and life is good.
So the land is still being farmed?
The land is still being farmed. I own 80 acres. My dad, mom moved off the farm about 6 years ago and sold the farm. So
is 80 acres, could you live on the lease of 80 acres of beans or corn?
No.
No?
No.
Okay. It's just kind of like pocket money?
Yeah, it pretty much is, yeah. By the time you pay taxes on it, rent price and so forth like that, the taxes on it pretty much eat up half of the rent price.
Now, I was wondering, there's a terminology called sharecropping,
mm-hmm.
and do the modern day landowners like yourself go on, here's what it's going to cost you for the year, or do they go on, I want a percentage of a bushel, or how does that work nowadays?
Basically, from the area that I'm from, we don't do the sharecropping stuff. It's pretty much, this is the price of the land that if you want to rent it, you can rent it for this price, and it factors into the cost of farming.
But sure.
Farmland has gotten so expensive that it's made it really hard for a young person to start out farming. $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, even $10,000 an acre, depending on where you live. And, you know, the farther south you go, the more the land's worth because you got a little longer growing season.
I often marveled at the fact that if the corn prices are good and the soybeans are good, the stuff that you need next year for the season, the prices go up.
Yep.
And so what you gained is taken away by the increase of the seeds and fertilizer and all that.
Yeah, I mean, look at the size of tractors, for instance. You know, my grandfather, when he bought that John Deere G, and I mean, we had AMs and also international tractors too, but $2,500, 45-horse tractor. If you want to buy a 45-horse tractor now, it's considered a utility tractor, and it's $20,000, you know, $25,000.
Have you ever hopped into a brand new, fully equipped, biggest they've got, John Deere or tractor and or a combine?
I have not been in the new ones. I've done work with some farmers every once in a while, helped them drive stuff, and I've been in some Caterpillar when the Challengers first came out, so I've been in some pretty fancy ones, you know, in the 300-350 horse range. I've not been in the 620 horse range or the 500 horsepower range ones.
Wow. And did you look at the price tag?
You always have to. Yeah. I mean, the nice thing about the internet now is you get a decent idea what the price tag is, and, you know, it's $500,000.
I was just going to say $500,000.
Yeah, and $500,000 doesn't buy you a new combine. It buys you a shell of a combine, and then you still got to put heads on it, and each one of those is $100,000 or more.
Wow. That's almost unfathomable when you think about it. And there are people around here that are cropping maybe 500, 600, 1,000 acres, you know.
Yeah, and there's some are in 20,000 to 30,000 acre range, because if you're going to buy that type of equipment, that's how tight the profit margins are.
Yeah, it's crazy. When you were growing up, did you have a pet?
We had dogs, but the dogs were more, I wouldn't know if they call them pet, they were work dogs. We had Australian Blue Heelers, and they are cattle dogs and use them to chase cows and stuff like that. And it's funny, cows are really good at realizing when there's no dog around, and they don't listen well then. But once the dog shows up, even if it's a puppy, they're like, yeah, now we're going to listen to you a little bit better.
How many cattle did you have at the max?
We had always had 30 milk cows at our farm, and my uncle had 30 milk cows at his. And then probably another, I would say, 30 beef cows from the hosting line, and then we also had Herefords. We ran about 50 of those.
Okay. Did you have De La Salle or Surge?
We had Surge.
Surge?
Surge Pipeline, yeah.
Now, being the fact, Randy, by the way, folks, if you just tuned in, my guest this morning is Randy Brewer, and a lot of you will recognize that name, former Gopher great, and also a Milwaukee Buck and a Timberwolf, professional basketball, retired now. So I always ask this question, and I get teased about it, but it's always fun. Do you remember your first bicycle?
Yes, I do.
That's why I asked the question. Yep. A little smile is coming over your face.
No, it was a Stingray. Swin, I believe it was the brand name of it, the Stingray with the banana seat on it, no cool. Gears.
All right. Mm-hmm. You rode that around the farm?
Yeah, a little bit, but gravel roads and riding bikes never turned out that well.
How about your very first car?
How about the first motorcycle?
I have a motorcycle. I've had a motorcycle for over 50 years.
Yeah.
So I've had all kinds.
So the next, when I was about 12 years old, we got a motorcycle, you know, just to run around the farm and stuff. And it was just a little Honda 90. Not the yellow one that you're thinking of. It was actually a street legal bike at that time.
That was my very first one. I thought it was a 50, though. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the blinkers and all of that stuff. Yeah. And, you know, when I stood up on it, the seat was probably a foot down.
Yeah.
I can't imagine when you were...
Yeah, mine was the bigger one of it. It was a street legal, but it was more like a roadster, but it was a 90.
Okay.
And then after that, we got a little 125 Enduro.
Okay.
And that was really great for chasing cows and stuff like that and cattle, because now when you went to get the cows, it was just right down the pasture, go get them. And the funny thing about cows, especially beef cows, on a motorcycle, you can drive right up to them. If you showed up with horses, which we also had, absolutely not. They'd run from horses. Motorcycle, no problem. And then they came out with three-wheelers, so we had those. And then, of course, then they came with four-wheelers. And then life was great chasing cows and herding cows.
When you were riding that motorcycle around, you know what they can do with them today.
Yep.
You know, the loops and all that stuff. Did you ever feel in your mind while you're driving, like, I bet I could do this and maybe try it, or said, no, I'm not going to try it, but I think I could do it?
Nope, never thought that part. The only thing that I was pretty decent at was doing wheelies.
Okay.
But there was a price that you paid, especially on mine when you did a wheelie, is if you dragged your legs too far back, you end up burning the side of your leg. So,
yeah. How?
Yeah.
Never get road rash?
Nope. Never wiped out on it, you know, other than a couple times you hit a cow pie in the pasture and then your back end would slide out. But never on the road.
So you never milk cows by hand or in an emergency by hand?
Only to shoot the cat in the mouth with the milk.
Okay.
But no, we always had buckets and stuff like that. I mean, we had the big buckets and the shotgun pails when I was a kid. And then we went to the surge pipeline and, you know, the belt and the bucket on that. The problem I always had milking cows is my ears would always pop every time I bent down to put the bucket on, and I just hated that.
Okay. No, you're not being funny.
No, it's about the low pressure.
Okay.
From going from high altitude to a low altitude, you know, what you short people deal with.
Okay, let's get it over with, folks. How tall are you?
5'27".
12.
For the people that are in college, that's 7'3".
You're 7'3"?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. No wonder you look so big.
Mm-hmm.
And when did that start happening?
I was always tall. From grade school on, by the time I was in third grade, I was taller than my teacher. But that wasn't really accomplishing much because Miss Manthe was probably 4'11" or something like that. So,
no, is that and I don't want to dwell on that. I want to know more about you, you know. Mm. But I do want to know, and you've been asked questions. What's the most common question people ask you besides how tall are you?
How's the weather up there?
Oh, doesn't that make you kind of like...
Well, there's a great answer for it. You just spit on them and tell them it's raining.
I'm going to take a break. We'll be right back. Our guest this morning is Randy Brewer, and we're going to get some more information about what it's like to grow up in Lake City, Minnesota, taking on teams like Kenyon and Wabasha. We'll be back in just a moment.
Hello, this is Josh Gehr. My wife and I received bad news in 2006 when I was diagnosed with cancer. In addition to my growing health concerns, medical bills were piling up. I beat cancer, but I learned the struggles families face with the skyrocketing cost of health care. I'm running to be your state representative to be a voice at the Capitol who will fight for affordable health care. I will work across the aisle to lower costs and assure you are able to keep your doctor. November 6th, vote for me, Josh Gehr, to be your next state representative.
Paid for by Friends of Josh
Gehr. This is Julie Pritchard, Chair of the Northfield School Board. We have listened intently to our community to understand your priorities for moving the school district forward. You have told us to focus our efforts on the elementary and early childhood facility needs, school security, and to minimize the impact to you, the taxpayers. The Northfield School District bond referendum is in response to what we heard. With a crowded November ballot, please take time to become informed about this important local issue. Information about the bond can be found on the Northfield School District's website. Be sure to vote on November 6th. Thank you for your support.
Prepared and paid for by Northfield Public Schools.
This is Brad Ness, Northfield City Council member, encouraging you to vote on November 6th. The Northfield Ice Arena Advisory Board met for over a year and a half evaluating our ice arena and options on what to do about its current condition. Northfield and Dundas residents will vote on a 1/2 cent local option sales tax expected to generate over $7 million on a 20-year term. An additional $3 million or more is expected to be generated to support parks, trails, and recreational facilities in Northfield and Dundas. Visit the City of Northfield website at ci.northfield.mn.us for more information and vote on November 6th.
Music from 1979. Sound familiar?
Yes, it does.
Can you name that tune?
Oh, I know it, and it. I'm not going to be able to come up with a tone.
Yeah, don't feel bad. You know who sang it?
Yes, I do, but I can't think of his name right off. Okay.
And I know exactly what you mean.
Rod Stewart.
That's exactly right. Rod Stewart. And
yeah, I'm not going to call him the name.
Do You Think I'm Sexy?
Yeah, that's it.
Now, in a conservative town like Lake City, did that offend anybody, a song named Do You Think I'm Sexy?
I don't think as a high school student that I actually even understood what the words were involved in a lot of the songs and what they all meant. As I've gotten older and listened to the songs that I love from the 70s and the 80s, I sit back and go, wow, that's what they meant.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I do the same exact mm-hmm. thing. I like to explain that when I first started radio, we had a couple of tape recorders, cartridge machine, cart machines, three turntables, and you were busy. It wasn't like the computer just grabbed a mouse. And so I always knew the opening to the song and the end of the song, because at the end of the song I had to do something. And now I listen to the whole song and the words, and I go, oh, that's what that's all about.
Yes, exactly right.
Okay. Yeah. So do you water ski?
No, I do not water ski.
Ever?
No.
Okay.
We're on the farm. We actually had to work during the days.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
No water skiing for us. No, not really even any fishing until got a little older, and then we went to Canada, so we didn't have to go fishing. We went catching.
Where did you go in Canada?
A place called Hooker Lake. Okay. And so it was a fly-in. And it was absolutely wonderful. You're the only people on the lake. Or there were three cabins there. And most of the time there was just two groups in the yep. two cabins. And just fun time fishing. I mean, beautiful weather, beautiful food. And it's funny. Fish taste a lot better when you catch them and cook them immediately than what they do when you go buy them in the store.
Shore lunch.
Yes.
You know, and if you got a guide mm-hmm. and they have that big black pot, a frying pan, and they throw that bacon in there so they can cook the...
Yep.
Oh, man, that's heaven.
Yeah, we didn't do too many of the shore lunches just because that's a lot of extra work. We just went, we had depth finders, so we knew what level of the water to be fishing in. And if you could find that little bit of a raise from deep water to shallow water, that's where the walleyes were. And you put your hook in, and pretty much if you were doing it right, you know, within 3 seconds, you had a fish on.
Wow. That's got to be a lot of fun.
It is. I mean, you take your kids up there, and I remember taking my one son there, and we're in the boat, and I put a Betis hook for him, and he's like 5 years old, and he throws his hook in, and he goes, Dad, I think I got something. I go, oh, come on. Seriously? He rolls up. Sure enough, he's got a little 16-inch walleye. Take that off. And so you never know how good you're going to do that day, so we always keep two fish per person. You know, so we'd have something to eat, well, especially the first day, and after that, it was one fish per person, and put that on. Re-hook his hook up and bait his, and he throws it back in. He's got another one before I can get my hand in the middle pail to pull out another minnow for me. So I haven't been fishing. He's caught three fish.
Wow. And that's got to be a great father-son
experience. Oh, yeah.
It's
absolutely wonderful. It's great time, and it's also just fun. It's a lot of goofing around up there, especially with my uncle and stuff like that. I had an uncle electrician, and he liked to pull people's legs. And one of his favorite things to do, we'd go up to eat. He'd go out there, and he'd go pick up mushrooms. And we all know what the mushrooms he was picking up was toadstools and stuff like that, all poisonous mushrooms. And he'd throw them in the trash but wouldn't tell anybody. And then he'd open up two cans of mushrooms and then saute mushrooms for on the steaks that night. And so he'd have more mushrooms for himself because nobody else would eat them.
Oh, yeah. My God. Randy Brewer is my guest on KYMN Radio from Lake City originally, now living in Eden Prairie after living several places as a professional athlete does during his or her career. What do you think about Waylon getting the job coaching the Gopher women?
I think it's a great opportunity for her. Hopefully she can take what she knows in basketball and teach it. That's the hardest part. And then the other hardest part about coaching, which I think sucks, is recruiting. You got to recruit people. And you go into recruiting, and you tell them how great they are, and as soon as they sign on the dotted line, you say, boy, you got a lot of work to do now.
Yeah, I just saw a bit on the sports channel about a coach had grabbed the mask of one of his football players,
mm-hmm.
one of the big
yep.
colleges,
mm-hmm.
and how that's... that they come into the home and they say, I will take care of your child.
Mm-hmm.
He will be like my son or
yep.
daughter. And then when the reality hits, they work them to death in some instances. Yeah.
But isn't there times when you'd want to grab a guy's mask and just go, what the heck were you thinking there? Like when Rhodes kicked the flag from the official
yeah.
and got a 15-yard penalty. Don't you just want to go, what were you thinking? How did you think that was going to help your cause? I mean, you're a professional football player. You're paid millions of dollars to play football. Don't kick the flag. That's an automatic 15-yard penalty. Gives them another drive opportunity, another scoring opportunity.
Yep. And one of them picked it up and threw it into the stands, I think.
Yeah, that's...
Before that.
Yeah.
But One of the things that I'd like to know is you mentioned you went back to your great-great-grandparents coming over on a boat and sneaking on the boat and then paying the captain for the transportation. What was the holidays like when you were a little boy and Rick and Beth? And at Christmas time, did you go to Grandma's house?
Well, is that before global warming? So when we'd go, you know, back then the holidays, by Thanksgiving, there's normally snow on the ground, and we had snowmobiles, and so part of the holiday was going out and riding snowmobile as kids. But, yeah, we'd go to Grandma's house, and then when she got a little older, then it was at my parents' house and my uncle's house, and that's where Christmas was. And, you know, pretty much the same meal every time, you know, or turkey, mashed potatoes, gravy, raisin sauce, if it was ham, and so forth like that. Yeah. And then all the different desserts, because back when my parents were growing up and stuff, everybody knew how to cook, and they all knew how to cook very well, and especially their baking items were excellent.
What about when you were a kid on the farm for breakfast? What was the routine in the Brewer family?
Pancakes. You know, for the kids, Dad would always have cereal. Eggs was a common thing. Waffles. I mean, it was always a full breakfast, and breakfast normally was at 8 o'clock.
Yeah. Breakfast was at 8 o'clock?
8 o'clock in the morning.
Well, what time did you have to be to school?
Normally, the bus showed up right at 8. Okay. So pretty much between 7:30 and 8, we were done by breakfast. But, you know, 8 o'clock breakfast is when Dad would finish milking and be up from morning chores was 8 o'clock. So that was when he had breakfast.
Now, did you have an ante room or whatever you call it onto the house where you took your clothes off and hung them up before you came into the house?
It was called the garage.
The garage?
Or the basement. Yeah, the basement was, you know, it's old farmhouse. Actually, it was an old schoolhouse that they moved to make it to a farmhouse.
Cool. It must have been pretty small.
It was, but they added on.
Okay.
And there was added on rooms to it and stuff. There were three stages of construction over my lifetime on the house. And the last one, when my brother Rick was brought home, was they added an entire kitchen area. And, you know, big kitchen. The base of the kitchen was as big as the whole house was.
Now, did your mom get up and prepare breakfast for the kids and for your dad?
Yep.
That was routine. Did she make homemade bread?
At one time, yes, but then there was a point where you could buy bread cheaper at the store than what you could make it. So,
okay. And so what was your favorite breakfast? Was it Wheaties?
Most of the time, my favorite breakfast was either waffles or pancakes. And, you know, the right time of the year, you got raspberry pancakes.
Did you have, were you a church-going family?
Yes, we were every Sunday.
Every Sunday at, what was the name of your church?
Lake City. But it was St. John's in Lake City, Minnesota. It was a Lutheran church.
Okay.
Yeah.
We have one of those here.
I bet you do.
St. John's Lutheran.
Yeah, it seems like they only have three or four names. St. John, St. Michael's, and,
So you're Lutheran, as they say. And so when Rick came, how old were you?
I was probably 9 years old. Yeah.
And how was that? How was it? Was that tough? Like, you know,
I don't know.
Are I good enough? I get to adopt another
kid? I don't
think
that ever happened. I mean, it was just, that's what happened. It's just like anybody else who has, you know, children. All of a sudden a baby shows up, and it's fun to watch that interaction between, you know, siblings when another one shows up. But, you know, I was old enough at that time that, you know.
So Rick was a baby?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That made things a little easier. Yeah. All right. And you and him are still in communication and spend holidays together or anything?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's good. 13 minutes before 10 o'clock. Randy Brewer is my guest this morning on Kim, originally from Lake City and now lives in Eden Prairie. We will be back in just a moment right after this important timeout.
This is Pam Lundell, and when I'm in Northfield, I'm listening to 95 The One, KYMN. Congratulations on 50 years, a half a century of excellence from you guys, so keep up the good work.
Your vehicle's engine warning light could mean something as simple as a loose gas cap or something serious and potentially expensive if you don't address it right away. Have our professional technicians at Witt Brothers Service diagnose and fix the problem as part of your overall preventative maintenance program. It could save you from costly problems down the road. Stop by Witt Brothers Service at 701 Division Street in downtown Northfield for all of your automotive maintenance and repair needs.
Probably Billy Joel. I know the song. Don't know who it is.
Yep. In 1979, it was the number five song for the whole year.
Diana Summers?
Donna Summers. Yep. And it's I Will Survive. Yep. Mm-hmm. By the way, when you were going to school, what was it like in 19... Well, you have to go back to 1961 when you first started school. Did you go to a school near the farm, or did you get bused into the cities at the beginning?
So I started off, my parents Lutheran, so St. John's also had a parochial school.
Okay.
And so that's where I went through for the first 8 years.
Now, did they have athletics in the parochial school?
They had a basketball program. It wasn't much of a basketball program, but we had one.
And Randy, one of the things I pride myself on is that I don't like to dwell on what most people know you for, and that's basketball, but it's a very important part of a conversation about your life. Mm-hmm. And so when you're going to this parochial school, now I went to a parochial school, and we did have competition in football and basketball and baseball. Among parochial schools, mine happened to be Catholic. Mm-hmm. Did they have that type of thing going on at St. John's?
They did, and we played other schools. You know, like there was a grade school out in Goodyear, you know, out there off of 9. We would drive out there and play them in basketball. Redwood would play in basketball. So there was some competition, but not a lot.
Okay, now, so tell me, you said that you grew fast, that you were taller than your teacher in the third grade or something like that. Did you like basketball? How did you get introduced to the game?
Got introduced, just you're tall, you're going to play basketball, so I started doing that. And then met my high school coach when I was going to my grandparents' house. They lived in downtown at that time. They moved off the farm. And he was, as all high school teachers tend to do, they have a summer job to make some extra money, and he was painting.
Oh, sure.
And he came down the ladder, and he realized that I was young and the tallest kid in town, pretty much. Or, you know, so that's how I met him. And then so he introduced my dad to what they had was Saturday basketball, and so I was at that. And then I played for the town team. 7th and 8th grade travel team in basketball.
Oh, I didn't even know they had those.
Well, the Lake City High School team, you know, 7th and 8th grade. So,
yeah. I know they have baseball and,
yeah,
and they do that, but I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So, did you, hey, kid, you're tall, come play for me. Well, what's it all about? Or did you learn?
You learn through it. Not a lot of thought process on it, but I was pretty good at it. I had soft hands. I could catch a ball, which is half the battle of playing basketball, and had a decent touch.
Did you have a hoop at the farm?
Yes. We had two. We had one up in the barn, so when the barn got so and so empty, you could shoot during the winter, and we also had one up by the pig pen.
By the pig pen.
That's right. There's a piece of cement, an apron going into the barn, and that's where that one was.
So you're in the eighth grade now. You're going to graduate from St. John's, and you're going to go to high school. You already know the high school basketball coach.
Mm-hmm.
It's a foregone conclusion that you're going to be on the team?
Well, I was on the ninth grade team, and then by the time I was a sophomore, that's when I played for the varsity team then. And at that time, there's a guy named Mark Dunbar who was pretty good. He was 6'4", and they call us a dynamic duel, and we were good. We won that year. We won all their games but two. We lost our first game of this year, and we lost our last game to a team called Winona Cotter.
Okay. That's a team that one of my high schools I went to played, and we wore buttons saying Slaughter Cotter.
Mm-hmm.
I'll never forget that. So when did you know you were tall?
Forever. Because I was always taller than everybody else. But I don't think you really realize how much taller you were than people until, you know, probably when I got in the 7th and 8th grade time frame and so forth. And the advantage of being tall and also the disadvantage of being tall is people think you're older than what you are.
Oh, yeah. Sure. So I've been told that, you know, we've all heard about growing pains. I mean, physically,
yep,
growing pains.
Mm-hmm.
Did you experience those and not know what was going on? Or?
I never had the growing pains. Most of the time what that deals with people is it ends up with being in their knee joint is where it really bothers them. I never had the growing pains, so I guess genetics were wonderful for me.
Mm-hmm. And how tall were you upon eighth grade graduation?
Probably 6'7".
Oh, wow. Yeah. Wow.
So
you were ducking doors from the time you were in grade school?
Well, either you ducked or you hit your head, so you figure it out pretty quick, Wayne. I don't know about you short people, but, yeah, once you hit your head a couple of times, you learn to duck.
Okay. So what about buddies and friends? Did you have a special good buddy in grade school?
Not so much in grade school. Again, being on the farm, when school got it done, you got on the bus, you went home, and you went out and did work. I guess my closest friends were my cousins. My dad and my brother farmed together, so Tracy and Pam were their closest to me in age, and I guess they were our best. We were best friends.
Well, what is that uncle's name? You obviously admire him.
Russell.
Russell.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you call him Uncle Russell?
It was just always Russell.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yes. And he gave us a lot of grief, too. I mean, the first question he'd ask you every day when he saw you, so you're up for all day.
Okay, Uncle Russell.
Yeah.
So what is a typical door entrance or height for?
Depending where you are, 6'8" for most residential areas.
Oh.
And even your place here, it's probably 6'8".
Okay.
And then it moves to 7 foot is the standard commercial entrance. And some of the new places now, the church that I'm a member of now, they just built a new building, and I think their entrance is 8 foot.
Okay, which is nice.
Yeah.
So what about bed when you were a kid? What was the story in that regard?
Extra long twin, and then when I got into the NBA, I ordered a bed that had it specially made for me, and that was long enough and so forth.
Well, then you have to have a room big enough for the bed.
Well, yeah, but most rooms are 8 feet wide someplace.
Okay. Randy Brewer is my guest this morning from Lake City and now living in Eden Prairie. And we're talking about the good old days back on the farm. What about in high school when you got there? What activities? We obviously know that you played basketball, but what other things did you do and get interested in?
Oh, you know, just like everybody in high school, you find something to get involved in. I can't carry a tune even with a wheelbarrow, so singing was definitely out. Acting-wise, not too much to play stuff. I have a little bit of skill with woodwork. My brother is very skilled in woodwork, and matter of fact, you get back to that. The Catholic Church in Lake City had a big steeple, highest point in Lake City. Big, proud moment for them and bragging rights and all that, the highest point in Lake City. It got struck by lightning probably 15 years ago. And actually had a fire start up in the steeple. And so they were in a position of, do we tear it down? Do we rebuild? What can we do? And my brother, because he trained under the Peters family, actually knew how to work with wood and actually do it the old-fashioned way, the way it was built there. So sitting down with some engineers and stuff, he designed the way to fix the burnt areas of it so they were able to save their steeple. And so the big joke has always been that it took a Lutheran to save the Catholic Church steeple.
Now you know what's going to happen. All of the listeners and me, anytime we go to Lake City, we're going to be looking for that church.
Yep, you should.
And will it be on 61?
It'll be on the way to Rochester. And if you're going to Rochester from Lake City, it'll be on the left-hand side of the road.
Okay. How far into town is it?
It's right next on the main drag.
The road to Rochester.
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Where all the sailboats are?
Yeah, matter of fact, you keep going too far and forget to stop, you drown in the river. Yeah.
Okay. 3 minutes before 10 o'clock almost, we're going to take a final break this hour. We'll be back with our guest this morning, Randy Brewer.
Leo South in Lakeville is not your typical power sports company. It's family owned and run, meaning you actually get to talk to the owners. What's even more impressive is they have 25 plus employees and they all work every hour they're open. So you don't have to stand in long lines waiting for help. Plus, get faster and more coordinated service.
Remember Leo South in Lakeville. We sell fun.
Visit leosouth.com to tempt yourself.
Portable One, the one you want at Leo South.
We sell fun.
I know the song very well.
1979, it was the number 7 song for the entire year. Rupert Holmes is the singer, and it's called Escape, the Pina Colada song.
Now, just so everybody knows, he doesn't know this off the top of his head. He's just reading it off of a list. So don't let him fool you.
You dirty dog.
That's right. That's me.
You know what the whole song is about?
It's about trying to find a girlfriend through the newspaper, I believe, and finds out that he contacted his wife.
Yeah.
So they're both cheaters.
Yeah. something Jerry Springer would enjoy doing an interview with. At 2 minutes before news time, I believe, at 10 o'clock on KYMN Radio, our guest this morning is a gentleman by the name of Randy Brewer. And Randy and I are chit-chatting about life. Now, when you were in high school, you mentioned that obviously you're on the basketball team. You kind of suggested you can't sing, so you didn't join the choir. Yep. And acting, did you do a little bit of theater?
No.
How about wood shop or metal shop?
Wood shop I was pretty good at. I had a great teacher there, Mr. Kiefer, and his son was a really good pitcher, but tore out his arm before he could make it in the majors. But excellent pitcher.
Did you participate in baseball or football?
You see the strike zone on a 7'3" guy? Do you think I have a chance? How many 7-foot players do you see playing in the major leagues?
None.
Yeah, there's a reason for that.
7'3", yeah. The strike zone would be from, what is it, your belly button?
I think it's your
chin
or
something.
I think it's from your knees to your boobage area, if we can say that.
Boobage?
Yeah.
Boobage area.
Yeah, high chest area.
All right. So you didn't
no.
play. And well, how about football?
Again, have you seen how they tackle people? My knees are great. I can go out walking, go pheasant hunting, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, they'd break you in half. And I was a skinny kid back in high school.
I was going to ask you how much you weighed back in high school.
Yeah, 190 pounds.
Oh, you were skinny.
220 pounds, I think, when I graduated from high school.
Okay. Okay, so we do the only sport you can do. Hey, wouldn't you have been good at volleyball?
They didn't have men's volleyball back then.
Oh, okay. How about gymnastics?
Yeah, that would really work out well.
Okay. I'm going to take a break here. We're going to play a song all the way through, and I'm going to give you your choice, and you just tell me what cut you'd like to hear, and we'll play that as we take a break. I don't have a newscast coming up, so I just want you to just tell me what number it is and see if I can get it.
Number 8.
Number 8, okay. I don't know what that is. I do know where... Your turn.
Anita Ward, and it's Ring My Bell.
Oh, you like that?
Well, it's obvious. Different than all the rest.
Okay.
The Sticks there, too, which would be good, but yeah.
We'll listen to the full song, come back in just a moment on The Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN, Northfield, Minnesota.
Thank you. I've been out till 2:45. Would you lock the door? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station, 1080 AM for over 50 years. And now, KYMN 95.1 FM, the one. The sun is coming out and it's shining down on Division Street. We're broadcasting live from our studios, and we're right across from the library, and I see a truck going by that's going to go fix something electrical around town. We were out of, by the way, were you aware that we had a tornado 2 weeks ago tomorrow?
Yes, I was.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And, man, I'll tell you what, my neighborhood got really blasted. Fortunately, no injuries, no major damage to the houses, but we live in a wooded area. And oh,
that's what God invented, chainsaws.
Yes, and a neighbor of mine named Joe came over yesterday, and a tree had broken in half, fortunately, because it tumbled onto my deck and patio. If it had broken from the bottom or tipped from the bottom, it would have wiped out a room. Anyhow, Joe came over and cut that down and then dragged that thing at 20 foot long, maybe 15 to 20, and dragged it out of the yard. And I told him, man, you're pretty good with that chainsaw. He's a banker, by the way. And I'm not a fix-it guy, do-it guy. I wish I would have taken those classes you took, like woodworking, et cetera. I just don't do that stuff.
Well, you got to volunteer on a farm, and then you learn how to fix stuff real quick.
That's exactly, and I have great admiration for farmers. Mm-hmm. Probably one of the most talented professionals there are.
And if they're not talented, they fake it till they make it.
Or they go to the USDA and say, I don't know where I was going with that.
Are you talking about how farmers double their income?
Oh.
They put up a second mailbox.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
And you hear now when farmers pass away, they only bury them 3 feet deep.
Why is that?
So they can get a handout.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Are you Dick Jankowski's protege?
No, I would not want to. But he does have a face made for radio.
Yes, he does. Yeah. But, you know, you've been to many of his banquets where he has been the MC.
Yeah, way too many.
And but do you start laughing before he gets there?
Well, not anymore because I've heard the jokes, most of them all. I think I've heard all his stuff. Other than probably one or two.
But he tells them so well.
Yes, he does. He does a great job.
Yeah, and I start laughing when he I know what's coming, and you just start laughing because he's really good at that.
Or as my kids call it, he's really good at dad jokes.
Dad jokes, all right. In other words, he shouldn't be telling them to them.
Yeah.
At 7 past 10 o'clock on KYMN Radio, Randy Brewer is my guest this morning. Yes, he's the Brandy Brewer. Yeah. Randy Brewer that you may have heard of or even enjoyed watching playing basketball. We're talking about high school. Did you go to the prom?
Yes, I did.
And was that interesting, fun, exciting? Where did they find a tuxedo for you?
You can find tuxedos. I think at that time we just wore suits, so it wasn't a fancy prom that it was. Okay. It was just a suit, and had one made, you know, not for prom, but for graduation and everything else that's involved with it. So, yeah, I went to prom, went out to Rochester for dinner. And
Michael's?
Yep. That's pretty much where everybody went. Yep. You know, a group of us went there, and a group of us went to the prom.
Sure. I asked you, I think, already, but I don't recall the answer, your first car that you owned by yourself that you got?
It literally was a car that was only driven to church on Sundays. It was a 1968 Galaxy 500. I think it had 32,000 miles on it. And the guy that owned it before we had it, if you drove by his farm place, it was immaculate. There was not one blade of grass, even under the fence, that was taller than any other piece of grass. And he had his name etched into the hubcaps and telephone number. The jack that you had, remember the old bumper jack?
Yeah.
It was perfectly placed exactly where it's supposed to be with rags around it so it wouldn't vibrate or anything like that. Just an absolutely wonderful car.
And that guy was really determined to be neat.
Yes, he was.
Now, Galaxy 500, it's a big car.
It's a big car, but it had the old 302 engine in it, so it was a big car with a really slow engine.
Okay, and how old was it?
1968, so I got my driver's license 1976.
Okay.
So,
well, you had to pay a pretty good penny for that, I would imagine.
Well,
31,000 miles.
Yeah, but it wasn't bad at that time. As my parents said, you want something reliable, which is very important when you're sending your kid off to school.
Were you embarrassed driving in that car?
No, not at all. It was a car.
Well, that's the attitude that I had, too. Mm-hmm. And I had people that, no, I'm not driving a grandma car. No. It's free. I won't be seen in that. But anyhow, I had a Ford Galaxy 500, that 59, and went over a cliff on my way down into, I was going from Austin, Minnesota to Tomah, Wisconsin on 16.
Yep.
I don't know if you're familiar with that area.
It's over there in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Winding Road.
Well, down into Lanesboro.
Yeah.
Yeah. Big story, but the show's about you. That's what I want to talk about. So when did you have to start being ordering clothes that, you know, you couldn't walk into a your local? You were old enough to remember local retailers?
Yep. Yeah, okay. We had a local retailer and stuff. Probably somewhere around 8th or 9th grade. You can't be skinny and tall. You'd be fat and tall, but not skinny and tall.
Yeah.
And so at that time, waist size of, you know, 28, 32. So there's a lady in town that would make my blue jeans for me, Mrs. Hafe. And so she made all the blue jeans and stuff like that. And thank God we didn't have a dress code in school. So blue jeans and, you know, a T-shirt, similar to what I'm wearing right now.
What is your inseam?
42 inches.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Holy cow. That's my waist.
Yeah.
10 minutes after 10 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair, KYMN. Randy Brewer, my guest this morning. So you get through high school, you do a little bit of woodworking in there, you play basketball, no other sport, you're being recruited. And like I said, I don't like to make this all about that, but it's interesting to me. You're a hometown boy or a home state boy. When did they start paying attention to you, the Twin City media or colleges?
Well, it was interesting because about 6 years ago, my parents moved off the farm. And so when they moved off the farm, we went through and up in one of the attics was all the boxes of mail that I got. I think William and Mitchell was the first school to contact me somewhere around eighth grade.
William and Mitchell?
Yeah.
The law school.
No.
Okay.
No, but it's a school out east or something, I believe it was, that contacted me. And it was fun because my kids were going through all the mails. And we kind of kept just a letter from each college. But my kids were going, you went to the University of Minnesota when you could have gone to this school or this school or this school. And I go, yeah.
Did they actually come and watch games, scouts?
Yeah, there were. Minnesota came, Iowa came, and there were other scouts, and Wisconsin came. And one of the funny stories about that is, you know, Lake City's kind of in the middle of nowhere. But Iowa had their own airplane for flying their team around. And Madison, Wisconsin, Coalfield came, and Ludos, and they came to the airport, and there was a taxi waiting for them. And so the first one there got the taxi. There's not another taxi in town.
Okay. That's funny.
Yeah. So, are you the college coaches going to the taxi? Yep. And so the first one there stole the other guy's taxi.
So what did they do? Did they come in and schmooze your mom and dad?
They try, you know, they talk, you know, about all the things that they offer, all the things about their universities and so forth like that. I don't know if everybody remembers Rick Majerus. He was an assistant coach at Marquette. He was at our house and stuff, and he loved my mom's cooking. And I got to know Rick Majerus later, you know, when I was with the Bucks, and we became pretty good friends. And
What do you mean, liked your mom's cooking?
My mom could cook bars. Probably the best thing she does is make bars, and from different flavored bars, and they're just absolutely wonderful.
Okay, because I was thinking a sit-down meal.
If you came to our house and it was during...
A coach? Would,
if there was during one of the meal times, you were fed. When people built our silos, they were invited to dinner.
Okay.
You know? So food was always supplied to anybody that worked at our house or showed up.
What's your favorite thing that your mom made? Not the breakfast, but...
Well, my favorite meal, even to this day, is mashed potatoes, gravy, and ham.
Ham. Yep. Okay, mine's beef.
Yeah.
And got to be mashed potatoes. Do you make ham gravy?
Yes.
Oh, so do I.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people don't know that you can do that or don't do it.
Well, they weren't raised in the right areas.
Oh, yeah. Man. I have people that want to come to Thanksgiving dinner or whatever holiday because of the gravy.
Yes. Yeah. Ham gravy is absolutely wonderful.
Well, then that's what you and I have most in common,
yeah,
that we love ham gravy.
And then one time I was lucky enough, this was after I was in the NBA and I'd bought a tractor and stuff for my dad, and back where we are farming-wise, there was a neighbor, and we had a chopper and wagons and stuff like that. I finally got invited to go to their place to fill their silo. And the most fun about it was the lady that cooked there was an older lady, and all she ever did was cook on a wood stove.
Oh.
Brand-new house, but the wood stove was there, and it's the centerpiece of the house. And she made this pot roast and mashed potatoes and this meal that was to die for. I mean, I've never had anything better in my life than what that meal was.
You have a second one? Did you have more than one of those meals?
Just one, because we got the silo full in one day. I mean, that's okay. The way it worked.
Did you ask for the recipe? Or
there's no recipe.
The wood stove?
Yeah.
I get it.
It's just different way of cooking. Okay. I don't know if anybody's ever had a meal cooked off of a wood stove, but... Yeah.
I think I have, but I can't tell you when or where. Probably when we're fishing.
Yeah.
Going to Canada. I used to go to Canada and fish with, maybe you know this guy because you went out to the same school. And we're going to take a break, and I'll tell you who it is in just a moment, and then we'll come back and continue our conversation. Randy Brewer is my guest on Kim. We are a friend that you can count on.
Welcome home to Northfield Manor. On the campus of Northfield Retirement Community, Northfield Manor is proud to offer HUD Section 8 subsidized equal opportunity housing for adults 62 and older. Take advantage of all amenities on campus, including our state-of-the-art theater, Imelda's Marketplace, Fitness Center, Main Street Cafe, walking trails, and more. Call today, 507-650-7332. Northfield Retirement Community. Innovation. Choice. Tradition.
Another 1979 hit the year my guest graduated from Lakeville High School, formerly the Indians, or was that Wabasha?
That was Wabasha. Yeah. Tigers, Lake City Tigers.
Yeah. This is called Reunited, and it's done by Peaches and Herb. It was the number 4 song in the year you graduated from Lake City High School. One of the fellows that graduated from the University of Minnesota that you may know because he was in the sports world, John Mayazich?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he and I went fishing many times up in Canada, and he can sing.
Okay.
And we had more fun singing, camping under the stars, and catching fish.
I'm sure there's no alcohol involved with that at all.
There might have been a cocktail or two, by golly. I never even thought of that.
Yeah, that's right. That's probably what made the singing sound so good.
Okay. 1018 on 1080. Randy, when I do these interviews, I've invited guests to come back because I just don't get through it all. Mm-hmm. And what I'm trying to do is pace myself. And what I'd like to do is invite you to come back at your convenience. And I'd like to go up to when you became a pro. And then the next time you come back, tell us what it's like to be an NBA pro.
Mm-hmm.
Is that okay with you?
Yeah, it sounds fine.
Okay, because I just enjoyed the chit-chatting. Mm-hmm. So you're the I was asking you about being the headliner for a lot of people interested in your being recruited from high school, and you had many coaches write and several visit and all that. And you said that your kids even went, Dad, you had all these offers and you ended up at the University of Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
So the obvious question is, what convinced you to stay in your home state?
Well, it was a different time than what it is now. Back then they used to have basketball camps. Jim Dutcher ran a basketball camp. I went to the Iowa basketball camp. And so over the years, I developed a decent relationship with Jim Dutcher. I thought he was a decent guy and seemed to treat people decently. It was funny when we sent the first. So when I went to my first basketball camp, it was Bill Musselman's basketball camp, and then
Did you like this guy? I mean, he to me was dynamic.
Bill Musselman?
Yeah.
He was an interesting guy. Okay. I mean, I have nothing bad to say because I got to play for him in the NBA, and I thought he was a great coach. Okay. Enjoyed him.
And I interviewed him, yeah. And I liked him. I thought he was just right there. He was kind of almost like Billy Martin.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
But, and I met him, that was in eighth grade that I think I went to his camp and stuff. And so then when I went to Jim Dutch's camp in ninth grade, I was 6'11". And so you had the little card, you filled out the form, and well, they got the card and go, well, ninth grade, 6'11". Yeah, no, 6'1". They don't know how to write down there in Lake City.
Oh.
And then we walked in the room and, you know, to sign in for our, you know, dorm room and all that kind of stuff for camp, and it was right up here. And they got the card on it. Yep, 6'11".
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So who was with you in that particular year that you went to play for the Gophers? What incoming classmates and teammates did you have?
Zebedee Howell, Ben Coleman. But the year before that, they had the number one rated recruitment class, which was Daryl Mitchell, Mark Hall, Gary Holmes.
Were you looking forward to meeting these guys?
Yeah. It's always interesting when you go into that situation. One of the first things you realize when you walk in that, and you start looking through the press book and all that kind of stuff, you're looking down at it going, well, they're all Mr. Basketball or Mr. Basketball or runner-ups in whatever state they came from. And you realize that the level of talent, whereas in high school there could be one or two really good players on your team and everybody else filled in, college, they're all really good players.
Well, were you ever a Mr. Basketball?
Yeah, I was Mr. Basketball with Minnesota in 79.
How about with Lake City?
What do you mean?
Well, did they have a Mr. Basketball? And
well, Mr. Basketball is the state of Minnesota.
Yeah.
So for the entire state, yes.
Yeah. In high school?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You were?
Yes.
You still have that trophy?
We never get the trophy. It's a travel trophy. His name goes on it and at the bottom of it. But I do have the ring.
Okay. Mm-hmm. In a picture, I imagine, when you presented that.
Yeah.
But do you have a man cave?
My basement is set up, you know, from stuff from, you know, high school and college and the pros, yes.
Is it like if, let's say that you invited me to your home for one of those ham and mashed potato and gravy dinners, mm-hmm. would I say, Randy, will you show me your basement? And then would you tour the basement?
Yeah, I could take you down. The first thing you'd see is we'd head down and there's a landing to our basement, and there's my grandmother's Singer sewing machine, you know, the one with the belt drive and stuff that you had to pedal.
Yeah.
And above that are two pictures of me in my Gopher uniform. And then Milwaukee used to do caricatures of the team. Mm-hmm. And so there's all my years of Milwaukee. There's a picture of that, team picture. And there's also a team picture of me in Atlanta and so forth like that.
And so, and you'd have a story about each one.
I could.
I mean, if a person wants to hear the story, mm-hmm. you could probably enjoyably say, mm-hmm. here's the story.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have that with defeated Jesse James days. I mm-hmm. used to be a raider and robbed the bank during the reenactments.
Oh, the reenactments? You weren't there for the original?
So, okay. Well, as we move along, I've got pictures and all of that, and if somebody's interested and sincere, I'm happy to stop and say, well, this was taken during this, mm-hmm. and that was that. So it's kind of a nice feeling, and my wife had me take down plaques, you know, and, you know, come on, Wayne, a little bit much here, so.
Well, why is she the boss of your man cave?
Well, it's a family room, and it was inundated with egotistical things.
Well, that's because you earned them, right? So you should be able to be proud of them and put them up there. You should get one room of the house.
Well, I do. It's an attic in my garage,
yeah.
And I just pull the steps down. I go up there with a flashlight, and I just look at them.
That's right.
Doggone right. Randy Brewer, my guest on KYMN Radio, and you chose the University of Minnesota because of Jim Dutcher.
Jim Dutcher, I knew the coaching staff. It was between Minnesota, Iowa, and Wisconsin, all within driving distance for my parents to come to games if they wanted to go to games. And Minnesota was the closer of the two, of the three. So that's why I went with Minnesota, probably.
And then you mentioned that when you got on campus, you realized that the teammates that you had were all outstanding individuals, Mr. Basketball and their states and all that.
Yeah, there was a guy named Kevin McHale there, too. I mean, he wasn't too bad either.
Kevin McHale?
Yeah. He was a senior when I was a freshman.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, was that somebody you were familiar and aware of?
Well, I was aware of him. I mean, who lived in Minnesota that period of time and didn't know who Kevin McHale was? Yeah.
Okay.
He was a very good player for the University of Minnesota, and I think he went either third or fourth overall in the NBA draft in 79.
So as an incoming freshman, did you do you watch the senior games or whatever?
Played. I was a player.
You were a player as a freshman?
I was not a starter, but I played in when we got to the NIT championship game.
Mm-hmm.
I played 38 of the 40 minutes.
Wow.
So
Kevin McHale was your teammate on the court.
Yep. Yes.
And was there an adulation or a look up to? Were you kind of like thrilled?
I don't know if he was thrilled because you're also, every day in practice, you're getting beat up by Kevin McHale.
Oh,
which
yeah.
is what happens in basketball. And that's what makes you better. I mean, getting challenged every day. And if you can't score against Kevin McHale, then, you know, you're in trouble. And if you can score against Kevin McHale, you can probably score against anybody.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, how much did elbows play in college basketball?
They were always there. I mean, when you're 7 feet tall, just being around people, you're going to hit people with elbows. I mean, because they're short and your elbows are normally right around people's height, you know, face height. So everybody got cut with elbows. I mean, if you look at any basketball player that's played in the game, they all have scars across both eyebrows. We all have stitches there. I've got stitches on my chin and different places from being hit.
One of the things that I'm so glad I thought of it is that I played a little basketball. I did not make a team, but I liked the game, and I was smaller at that time. And I just was taught the basic rules. And I watch basketball now, especially in the pros. Here I have an opportunity to ask a pro. Traveling, they don't even call it. Palming the ball, they don't even call it.
You're absolutely right. They don't call it in high school either. When I was coaching high school, it drove me nuts. And I was told by an official one time, well, they're allowed 2.5 steps.
What?
Yeah. And the official didn't know what he's talking about, and that's the problem. They don't call traveling, and kids get used to it. You know, I was played in a time when there was a guy named Dr. J who was pretty good, and at the time he won a dunk contest by taking off at the free throw line. Well, I watched kids not take a dribble, you know, outside the key and shoot a layup and not get called for traveling, and you're going, well, they're not Dr. J.
Gee whiz, the officials just don't know the rule, or they just don't care?
I think the game has gotten so fast for them, and that they've watched college and pro, and they see so much traveling that I don't think anybody knows what traveling is anymore.
Oh, for gosh sakes. How about pummeling the ball?
You see it called once every decade.
Okay. Yeah. But I can remember watching a professional game, and maybe it was Magic Johnson or somebody, and, you know, he's on the top of the key, and it's 1, 2, 3, 4, go up without the ball touching the ground.
Yep.
I'm going, well, wait a minute.
Yeah.
And all these slam dunks are probably half of them are traveling.
At least, yeah.
Yeah. So did you?
Travel?
Mm-hmm.
Too slow. They catch me.
Okay.
They could see me do it. I'm sure at some point in time I traveled, but I was taught how to play basketball correctly, therefore it never happened. When I was coaching in high school, there was a kid, he was a really good shooter on our team, but he traveled every time he caught the ball. He would catch the ball, and then he'd jump up in the air and come down. Or he'd have 2 feet in front of the three-point line, and somehow, miraculously, he'd get 2 feet behind the three-point line and then shoot the shot without taking a dribble. And I said, you know, the problem is when you get into a game, and it'll be against a good team, and the official knows what a travel is, he's going to call you on traveling. And And sure enough, we get into a couple games where he's got 5-6 turnovers because he's traveling every time and they're finally calling it. And he's looking over at the bench and going, yeah, I told you, and you didn't listen. And now you pay the price.
Good. When you were now we're you're a freshman and you're on the you show up for games and you can play 42 minutes or 38 minutes or whatever it was. So when was your first back in your hometown? I would imagine perhaps I know that they got a radio station after you graduated, an extension of Red Wing, I think, and they probably had a newspaper. And I imagine you were interviewed by the local newspaper.
You're forgetting about Gordy Hink and KDHL. You're killing me, man.
Oh man, that's right.
You're killing me. Right. The mouth of the Mississippi, Gordy Hink.
Yeah. Boy, that brings back memories.
All bad.
Yeah, they were okay. But did you enjoy that attention that you got from people? And when did you start getting attention from the Metro media?
It started happening about the time we got to the state tournament, you know, the first time in 78, you know. And it was, he's too skinny, he can't play, you know. And, you know, part of it was, you know, you'd watch me in the state tournament play, and I remember my high school coach. We were having a conversation a couple of weeks ago, and you know, when I got to so after high school, then the state of Minnesota, put an all-star team together, and we played Indiana, and we beat them like a drum.
Really? You think that would be just the opposite?
Well, that's because you guys are all just prejudged us as of being Hicks, but I was actually a pretty good basketball player at one time. And one of the reporters saw me actually take a dribble with the ball and dunk the ball and stuff like that, and goes, well, you never did that in high school. Well, my high school coach goes, you couldn't do it in high school because there was a guy in front of him, a guy behind him. All you could do is catch the ball, turn and shoot. And when you're playing one-on-one, all of a sudden now the game changed.
So you could have, would you have liked to have been able to dunk the ball? I mean, to me, it's a show off. Obviously, it's a show.
Well, you got to understand, when I catch a ball, especially in high school, everybody's trying to take a charge because that's the only way they would stop me. So I could never get close to the basket without having someone standing right in front of you. So it just wasn't a possibility. And if I did put the ball on the ground, then I'd be the same height as all you little short people are, you know, with the ball down there. Ball up here at my chest, you know, little guys like you, Wayne, are jumping up trying to reach the ball.
I did that, by the way. I got the Minnesota Vikings back in the 70s to come down and play a charitable basketball game.
Did they bring their donkeys?
No.
You remember Minnesota playing on donkeys?
Yeah. No, we didn't do that. We had our basketball coach at the time, Jeff Domeyer, and Al Birkbaum, good basketball players against the Vikings.
Yeah.
And I went for a layup, and Alan Page blocked it.
Yeah.
And I knocked me right on my butt.
Yep.
Right on my butt.
Yeah, don't come in the paint, man. You have no business being in the paint. Stay out of the paint. We'll hurt you.
I had no business being on the basketball floor, but I organized it, so I put myself in.
That's why they invented the three-point line, so keep little guys outside the paint. Give them a reason to shoot those shots.
Was there a three-point when you were playing in high school or college?
No, college. Thank God. I wouldn't have had all the points I had, because Trent Tucker would never pass the ball inside if he could get 3 points every time he shot the ball. That's why we made him take the ball and bounce every time there was a violation, so he had to pass once.
Okay. Yeah. You have all your inside humor, don't you?
Yes.
And hopefully...
But I'm not joking here. I'm serious.
I know you are, but it's a nice way to say it.
Yeah.
So, your sophomore year, Kevin McHale is gone. Mm-hmm. How well did you do, the team do your freshman year?
Freshman year, we went to the NIT championships. And back then, there was only, I believe it was 32 teams went to the NCAA and 32 teams went to the NIT. So, it was actually a pretty big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, you had to basically win the Big Ten to get invited to play in the NCAAs.
Okay, and what was the furthest you ever traveled with the Gophers?
NCAA, we made it to Sweet 16.
Okay, and where was that held?
I want to say New Orleans, but I'm not 100% sure.
While you were in college, did you ever have an opportunity to have somebody help you with your homework?
Other than, you know, maybe someone helping you type a paper up, because I don't know if everybody understands what typewriters are and whiteout is and all that kind of stuff is. When you turn a paper in, it actually had to be perfect versus hitting backspace and, you know, deleting something. So always had someone probably type a paper. There's some people that can really type really fast. So, yeah, I had some help.
Okay. What about the courses? What did you major in?
Agricultural business.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And have you pursued that other than the 80 acres you share?
No, I have not. And basically, the University of Minnesota doesn't even offer that program anymore, or degree in that.
It was on the St. Paul campus?
Yeah, St. Paul campus, yeah.
So where was your dorm?
I started out in business, you know, University of Minnesota, and it's the main campus, and I got tired of not being able to get registered for classes that I needed to move on. And back then, they made it really hard at the University of Minnesota to try to finish in 4 years. So I said, well, maybe I can go to St. Paul campus and get a degree there in agricultural business. And it was easier to register for the classes you needed.
Did you ever spend any time in Eddy Hall on the U campus?
I've been there.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Was parking a pain?
You just never planned on parking. I mean, you know, when I did have a car, it was whether I got a parking permit. And if I didn't get a parking permit, the car went home.
And when you were over on the St. Paul campus and in business, agriculture business, did you say to yourself, wow, I didn't know that? Or did you say, I know all that stuff?
There's a lot of stuff that you learn, but you learn the reason why. Like, for instance, when I was there, why the row spacing in crops was at that time 38 inches for corn. Because that's the width of that's about the smallest set of tires you can get to go between the rows. And, you know, now we've got belt-driven tractors and stuff like that, so you can get down to a much smaller, you know, tire width, and then the corn width can get down to the 30 and 22 inch.
Were you amazed that you can jump on a tractor planter and push in some numbers and then sit back in air-conditioned comfort and watch television because a computer will turn it around and do all the things for you?
I never had that opportunity. It was, you know, you had to drop your roll marker and everybody laughed at you if you screwed it up.
Yeah.
Because you could tell after the crops up, you're going, uh-oh, something didn't go all right. I was pretty good at it, you know. But, I mean, I've seen, you know, farmers where, oop, chain broke there. Look at that. He's only half his drill's working. So, yeah, you know, the new ones now with the computer, and now they've even got the computers that, well, now are good enough, and the tractors are good enough that they can actually turn the tractor around.
Yeah.
That was just within the last 2 years.
Yeah, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. When you were planting, did you envy the people like me who could walk into a fall cornfield and hide where you cannot?
Yeah, but that's a disadvantage when you're pheasant hunting.
Okay.
I get shots, you never get to see the bird. You can only shoot the bird that's in that roll.
Okay.
I can shoot the ones that fly over everybody else's head.
Do you pheasant hunt?
Oh, yes. I have a great dog that I pheasant hunt with.
Oh, really?
German short hair pointer, so it pretty much says it's right there. And then you go up and kick it in the butt and shoot it.
I had a German Shepherd short hair, and it never stopped moving. It never stood still.
No.
Is yours like that?
Except for when it's on point, and that's why you have a beeper collar. Because if they go on point and you don't have a beeper collar on, you come back a year later, they're still on point, but it's a skeleton.
Okay. So I asked a question that I didn't get the answer, not because of you, but because of me. When did can you be more specific on when the Twin Cities started paying attention to you in Lake City by way of television sports guys and newspaper guys?
Probably at the very end, my senior year in high school, when I announced that I was going to the University of Minnesota. And then there'd be like Patrick Ricey, he's still alive, so he'd say, yeah, he's too skinny to play in the Big Ten.
Right.
Obviously, he was wrong again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I used to go out after games with him. Nowadays, they have the guys sitting at a desk along with their agents or whatever, and then they have the hats put out in front, and then they say, where are you going to go to school? And they look, and then they pick up a hat and say, I'm going here. Yeah. Do you wish that they would have been as showtime as they are now then?
No. I'm very happy it wasn't. I mean, it was very simple. We came up to a University of Minnesota game, and I want to say it was in January. We made the announcement my junior year in January, and so that took the end of the recruitment stuff, went away after that, and made the announcement at the end of a game at the University of Minnesota.
So. Okay. Here's a question. I'm glad that you said that, because I wonder how when a high school senior could be 17 years old, for example, decides that he's going to go to school. In your junior year, you make a commitment. And can you break? I mean, is there any legal you must? Do you sign papers or anything?
There is some papers that you sign. All scholarships are one-year scholarships.
Okay.
So, but, you know, if teams ever did to a player say, well, you just signed a one-year scholarship, we're not going to honor it after that, they would never get another person ever assigned to their school. So they honor their scholarship as long as you sign. I think if coaches get fired now or change, the coaching staff changes, you can go someplace else with no penalty.
Okay. Did they have the red shirt rule? The
red shirt rule has always been around, yes.
Well, tell me, help me out. I don't really, they have a freshman and a true freshman. You know,
yeah.
Like in football right now, they can only play four games, and I don't get the redshirt rule.
Well, it's about if an injury happens or something like that, or someone's not playing and they're going, well, let's just redshirt you right now. And there's a point in a year where you think about it, and then all of a sudden something happens, and all of a sudden a guy's playing, he gets good enough to play, the coach has confidence in him, and so then all of a sudden the redshirt rule goes away. But there's a limit, there's a time period, from my understanding, again, we're talking something that happened 35 years ago.
Whoa.
Yeah, that, well, geez, that kind of sounds like something that's been talked about in the news lately, hasn't it? Something 35 years ago, did I throw ice at somebody? Did I have a beer?
I guess I know where you're coming
from. Yeah, but, yeah, it was a long time ago for me, so I'm sure the rules have changed, but, you know, it tends to happen more in football than any other sport, because I don't remember, know if you remember how big you were as a freshman in college. You know, football players are big, strong people. Would you like to have another whole year to lift weights and then get decent size before you walk on the football field, even though you think you were decent size in high school?
Okay.
So it comes to about a strength factor and so forth. It doesn't happen too much in basketball, because now basketball, most of the players don't finish out 4 years. They leave early.
Yeah.
So that's where the redshirt thing comes from. So if you got injured or something, like in your first game or first two or three games, and they go, oh, we just redshirt him and he can be a freshman next year. It's kind of like PJ Flack when he talks about, well, this is his first year coaching, because year zero was last year. I don't know if that drives you nuts. It kind of tells me that someone's peeing on me and telling me it's rain. And it's like, from my college education, zero is a placeholder. It is not a number. It's your first year was last year. This is your second year.
And, boy, does that guy know how to generate publicity and recognition, self-recognition.
Yeah, he's a good snake oil salesman.
Yeah, I would love to have him on the air. I think
I'd
just say good morning.
Yeah.
And away he'd go. He's got a challenge this year coming up on Saturday.
Well, he's got some challenges just like he found out last year when he thought, I mean, let's be honest, I got rid of Tracy Clays because he won 8 games and won a bowl game. So they fired him because that was too many wins.
Do you know why they really fired him?
I'm assuming they fired him because he stood behind his players when they were wrongfully charged with a sexual misconduct.
Number one. What's the other reason?
Didn't look good in the camera.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Representing the state of Minnesota.
Yeah.
And I sometimes I wonder, you know, did you ever, like Musselman was a coach for you, and he was in shape, it appeared to me.
Mm-hmm.
Dutcher didn't look like he had any problems.
Yeah.
Do players in college, we're still in college, think, hey, the coach is yelling at me to do this, and he couldn't do one half of what I've already been doing. The demand that you get from a coach.
Do as I say, not as I do.
Okay.
You know, does that bring anything back?
Mom,
or,
Dad.
Or rule one, rule two. Rule one, the coach is always right. Rule two, if you think the coach is wrong, see rule one.
Amen.
Yeah, so my thing is, none of my coaches could do what I could do on a basketball court. You know, I was taught the hook shot, and my seventh grade coach said the reason I'm teaching the hook shot is, if it's good enough for Kareem, it should be good enough for you.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
That's right.
And what was his other
name? Lew Alcindor.
And he went to Marquette?
I can't tell you. I don't know.
I think he may have. So what about assistant coaches on the college level? How involved and how many and how much attention do college kids pay to their assistant coaches?
Probably not as much as they should. You know, I think nowadays what they look at is, can this coach get me to the NBA? At the University of Minnesota, I was fortunate to play under Jimmy Williams, who was one of Jim Dutcher's assistant coaches. And Jimmy Williams' idea was, you just have me and Kevin McHale go head-to-head all day long in practice. And, you know, that's just how it worked. You know, iron sharpens iron, and going against the best competition will make you a better player, or it'll crush you and you will transfer out.
And you hear that a lot about professional football, and, you know, Yep. Boy, they've got a great defense, so the offense is really going to do well because they're beating their own defense, whatever. So how many different coaches does a basketball team have?
I think they have a lot more now than they have players. But when I was at the U, there was three or four assistant coaches. And there was always a guy doing film.
How about weight coaches?
Strength coach. We just stole the football coach. You know, there was a weight coach. It was Coach Rohde at the University of Minnesota. And, you know, because it's 12 basketball players. And basketball strength is different than football strength. Football strength is, it's 3-5 seconds, and that's all you have to do. Basketball, it's being strong for the entire time, playing offense, playing defense, and the entire time you're on the court. So it's a different type of strength.
Now, I'm going to ask you a question that a lot of people are going to say, Wayne, how dumb. What position did you play?
I was strictly a center.
Okay.
Didn't really have the ability to dribble very much. I mean, one or two dribbles, and I was a center. And I was the old-fashioned center. The center plays with his back to the basket, catches the ball, and turns and scores, and shoots hook shots, jump hooks. And I was lucky enough to have a left hand just about as good as my right hand was on the hook shot. So if someone would take my right hand away from me, it gave me an easy shot to my left. So
one of the things that was the most fun of basketball was, you know, completing a hook shot.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like, wow, that was fun. I mean, two-handed,
yeah,
you know, shot at the basket like a foul shot. But a hook, man, that was so cool. So what was the... What were the expectations after you score? What would you do after you scored, or any of the other four scored a point?
What turn around and run back as fast as you can to build your defense from the paint out.
Okay.
You know? And depending on who you're playing, you had to pick up at a certain place. Frustrating thing when I'm watching the Gophers play now is they don't pick up their defense where they need to pick their defense up. They wait till guys get to the top of the three-point line, and that's when they start playing defense. Well, nowadays, the three-point shot, everybody's so good at it that you better pick guys up at half court and start trying to get them out of position at half court. And if I'm playing against a good center, especially when I was in the NBA, you didn't let them get to a spot. You met them at the free-throw line and bumped them as much as you could to try to get them off a spot.
Okay, now, what about that rule? These are all naive questions about half court. Once you're in your court side and going for a basket, you cannot go back over to the other side.
Right.
Do they hold that rule still?
That rule's still there. It's called over and back.
Okay.
Once you bring the ball, and again, I don't know the nuances of the rule anymore. They've made some exceptions, but it used to always be once the ball's across, you can't bring the ball back.
Yeah.
Now I think sometimes it's a foot, both feet and the ball have to be across. Again, I don't know what the rule is now anymore.
I just know as kids when you were playing, you know, you went over the line.
Yep.
You know? One Toke Over the Line. Do you remember that song?
I don't understand what toke is. What are you talking about?
Well, there's a bus. You get on a bus, you put in the token.
Oh, are you sure that's what it was? I thought it was the other toke.
Oh, well, you took me on that. I'm going to take it. We'll be back right after this important timeout. Randy Brewer is my guest, and he is from Lake City, now living in Eden Prairie. And we're talking about his career at the University of Minnesota and at Lake City High School. And Randy has agreed to come back at his convenience to talk about being a professional basketball player and what it was like then. And what it is like now, because there may be a world of difference, particularly with the paychecks.
Yes.
We'll be right back.
Have you stood in a gym surrounded by equipment and wondered what you should be doing? Have you stepped onto a treadmill with headphones and just zoned out? Step into CrossFit Scopos instead and let our coaches and community challenge and change you with a program scaled for you and a whole community of people cheering you on to be your best self. Go to CrossFitScopos.com and learn more, then take a free class. Come talk to me. I'm Greg Berube, the owner. That's CrossFit Scopos in Dundas by Menards.
Hello, this is Josh Gare. My wife and I received bad news in 2006 when I was diagnosed with cancer. In addition to my growing health concerns, medical bills were piling up. I beat cancer, but I learned the struggles families face with the skyrocketing costs of healthcare. I'm running to be your state representative to be a voice at the Capitol who will fight for affordable healthcare. I will work across the aisle to lower costs and assure you are able to keep your doctor. November 6th, vote for me, Josh Gare, to be your next state representative.
Paid for by Friends of Josh Gare.
I can just picture the drummer on this, opening this song. Name this tune.
My Sharona.
That's right. You know who did it?
The Knack.
Yeah. The Knack.
I think the album was Get the Knack.
Now, 1979, you were a senior in high school, but this song remained popular into your freshman year at college.
Oh, yes.
Did you guys have like boom boxes in those days in your dorms?
Yes, but this was not the music we got to listen to in the locker room.
What did you listen to?
We listened to more of the soul type music and stuff like that, from Soul Train and stuff like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And was that because there's a majority that
yep.
liked that type of music? And
oh, yeah.
You just, did you ever just say, rap wasn't in yet, was it?
It was just starting to come around the corner, yes.
Yeah.
It was what I called a good rap and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, now I have to be careful on anything past 1990 if mm-hmm. I don't have a radio edit of a popular song because they use words you just started.
Mm-hmm.
I was stunned. I would imagine most people were. So now you're in there. Kevin McHale is gone. So now you're a sophomore. And how did your sophomore year go?
We were about middle of the Big Ten pack. We were decent, but we weren't very good on the road. We weren't able to win the road games.
So what was your take on Bobby Knight?
Very good coach. But my view on him was he's abusive to players, and I'm not a fan of that kind of stuff where you just tear players down. And if you ever got in his doghouse, he was just relentless on you. But if you could survive him, you were a good player.
Did you ever have to do anything, not you, but any member of the team, including you, like punishment, like sometimes in football you have to run up and down the field and all that. Like, okay, you didn't do that very well. We've been practicing it for 2 hours. I want you to do 50 loops, do the steps twice or whatever.
It wasn't too bad at the U, but anytime they want to punish you, they made you run a gopher. Everybody else calls them killers or whatever. Whatever team in Lake City, it was called Tigers. It's where you start in the end line, you go to the free throw line, back to the end line, and you had to do it under, 28 seconds or 25 seconds, depending on how fast you were and so forth like that. So you always had to push yourself pretty hard on that. Probably the only punishment that I remember was actually my freshman year. Some guys went out and partied a little bit, and this was before YouTube and, social media and stuff like that. But if you're a party guy and you go someplace and the coach we'll find out at some point in time. And one of their guys, and I won't say his name, was Kevin McHale, went to some parties down in, I think it was Winona or someplace like that. And so the next day in practice, we ran a significant amount longer than what we normally have to run. And some people who spent way too much time out on Halloween having a party ended up saying hello to the porcelain Buddha or the wastebasket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there is that kind of thing that went on. How about your junior year? What accomplishment did you have your junior year under Coach Dutcher?
Oh, we won the Big Ten title. Wow. We won the last game down in Iowa. And, you know, I think we were 24-3 or something like that. So, you know, pretty good record, you know. And then went on into the NCAAs. And like I said, we played well. We won our first round game. I think we won our second round game, and then we lost the third round game.
What about traveling? Did you have charter flights, or did you have conventional flights, or did you take a bus?
We lived in Minneapolis, so it was almost always Northwest.
Okay.
In Northwest, we flew commercial pretty much everywhere.
Commercial?
We went. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to take a break, and it'll be a minute and a half, and then we'll be wrapping things up. And so I'm sure you've answered this question 1,000 times, but when I come back, I'm going to ask you, what was it like being on an airplane, a man that is 7'3"? Amazing. What was that like?
Residential or commercial, Cannon Valley Water in Dundas is the place to call for water. Whether it's a complete water conditioning system or just salt delivery and filters, Cannon Valley Water can take care of it. And Cannon Valley Water can also deliver Candy Yohai premium water right to your house or business at great rates, too. Chippewa Springs is as pure today as it was when we first tested it over a century ago, and is proudly distributed by Cannon Valley Water. Pickups are now located at 609 Stafford Lane in Dundas, just behind Aldi. Call Cannon Valley for your water today.
Hi, I'm April Kopak, manager at Three Links Apartments in Northfield. We are an active, independent community of older adults and disabled individuals. Our spacious one-bedroom apartments feature controlled key access, off-street parking, and are handicap accessible. This is a place to call home, make new friends, and participate in many activities and exercises. Tours are welcome. Please call Three Links Apartments at 664-8850 or find out more at threelinks.org.
When you work with folks you know, like me, Mark Quinnell, you know what to expect. That's why you should give State Farm Bank a try. A State Farm agent that helps protect your home, your car, and your family can help with your banking needs. It's more than just banking. It's banking with a good neighbor. State Farm Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Some products and services are not available in all areas. For information, call me, State Farm agent Mark Quinnell, at 645-4545.
Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
That's a giveaway.
Yep, it sticks.
Yep. Did you like them?
Yes, went to their concert, actually. One of the few concerts I ever went to.
Okay, name that tune.
Babe.
Right. You done good. Okay, the question is, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to the Wayne Eddy Affair here on your radio station, KYMN, out of Northfield, Minnesota. My guest this morning is, I almost was going to say late Greg, is Randy Brewer. And we talked about life on the farm, high school, and we're in college, and he's agreed to come back, and we'll talk about pro. There's a lot of interesting things that I'm sure you have to let us in on. But what was it like for people like yourself to fly commercial airlines, and even worse today than it was in 79?
Well, size matters.
Yes.
And not only how tall you are, but how wide you are in the hips. I'm fairly lucky. I'm not very wide in the hips, so the seats weren't too bad. As long as you get a bulkhead seat, life was good. So the big guys ended up in the bulkhead seats, you know.
By design?
Design, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
On a commercial flight?
Commercial flight, yeah.
Okay. So you didn't have its own plane?
No, you did not have their own plane. I mean, it's, again, basketball teams are very small. It's 12 guys plus the coaching staff.
Oh, yeah.
And then you also deal with the fake news media guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. What's the fake news that you don't like today? Wait, let's not get political.
Oh, you don't want to get political?
No, it's not my radio station.
Okay, not anymore. Okay.
And anyhow, I just think it's a crime what the airlines are doing to people in regards to the deregulation they went through. The broadcast industry went through deregulation, and what happened? The big boys with the money bought up everything, and now some of them are suffering, but don't want to get into politics. So anyhow, they reserve the bulkhead, which I try to get when I've got a, what do you call these things I'm wearing, prostheses. Yeah. And so I try to get something like that. And that's not bad, but still, did you ever get stuck in a regular?
Well, I can't get stuck in a regular seat. I can't get in.
Okay.
Because your knees are pinned against the seat in front of you. So the regular seats just are not possible.
Are you still recognized by people? I mean, you're a very big man, and your hands are unbelievable. Do you still get recognized as Randy Brewer, the Gopher, and the
old people recognize me?
Like,
yeah, like your age. Yeah. Really, really old people, you know. But and people that still have their memory, you know.
Which, you're being facetious now, but it's true. Yeah. It's true.
And a lot of people profile me. And, you know, because I walk in a room someplace, I'm tall, therefore I must have played basketball, which I always try to tell them profiling's wrong.
You know, we had a guy whose sister lived right on Division Street down the road here just before you go through a little curve. There's a house on a little hill. And I'm trying to remember who it was, but her brother was an NBA player, star, or whatever, like yourself. And I forget who it was. Do you know of any guys that, or maybe she moved to Minnesota and he didn't, or he wasn't?
Yeah, no, don't know.
Somebody out there saying, oh, I know who you mean, but anyhow, it's 11 o'clock and time for me to allow you an opportunity to stand up and stretch. And thank you very much, Randy, for coming down. I really appreciate it. I hope you enjoyed yourself.
I did, Wayne. It was very nice coming down here. Now I know what this corner building is when I drive through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And we'll make a date, and, not next week, but whenever's convenient to you immediately thereafter.
Okay, sure.
All right. Thank you very much. That's our show for today on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN, a friend you can count on. I'll be back tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. And we have to identify the station. We are KYMN 1080 AM, KYMN 95.1 at the FM side of the station in Northfield, Minnesota.
The KYMN Climate Show is a monthly feature here on 95.1 The One and AM 1080, discussing changes in climate and the science behind it. And now, your hosts, Alan Anderson and Bruce Moreland.
Welcome to the KYMN Climate Show with Bruce Moreland and Al Anderson, where we discuss climate issues in the news and then dig into the stories behind those stories. So, Bruce, what stories have you found lately?